Welcome to Future Proof, the marketing podcast from Kantar, the world's leading marketing data and analytics company, and Side Business School, University of Oxford. In each episode, we speak with marketing leaders and share insights to help brands and business leaders navigate the ever-changing marketing landscape and hopefully dispel some myths and misconceptions along the way.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Thank you very much for joining us and welcome to the Kantar Media podcast that we're doing as part of the Future Proof theme. And I'm here with Margot Swadley, who's the SVP of CRM Data and Insights at BBC Studios. And we're going to be together unpacking some of the content that's in our recent report, which is Media Trends and Predictions for 2024, which you can find. There's a link in the introduction to the podcast, and also you can go online to kantar.com/MTP24 to download it. So I highly recommend you have a look at the report. We're going to be pulling out a couple of themes for that, and really just talking about what's going to be happening in the production sector in 2024 and listening to what BBC Studios are up to. So welcome, Margot. Really nice to see you.
Thank you, Louise.
It's good to have you here. Can you just kick us off by telling us a bit about your role and about BBC Studios and what you guys are doing?
Yes. So BBC Studios is the commercial arm of the BBC Group, which means we're totally separate from the license fee funded part of the business, the public service element, which is the part that most people will be more familiar with, particularly in the UK. The public service element is the channels that you know, the bbc.co.uk, the website, iPlayer, all of that is the public service side. We are a part of the group, but totally separate from a funding perspective. We are we're commercially funded 100%, and we make TV programs. We are a production company, and we also sell them around the world. We distribute them to different countries, and we also maximize as much as we can the content outside of TV programs. So we also sell merchandise or run live events like BBC Earth Experience, Strictly Live Show, that type of extra above and beyond for people who really love content. And actually, UK TV is also a part of BBC Studios. The BBC Group.
So how much is it very UK focused in terms of what you do, or is it more globally focused, or how does that balance sort of play out?
It's a good question. So obviously UK TV is much more UK focused. The production team is, I would say, we sell our content to anyone around the world. So it has a much more international feel about it. We do, of course, put loads of content into the UK, Planet Earth 3, as I mentioned, Strictly, Antiques Roadshow, EastEnders, you know, a whole list of what you would find in the BBC is our largest customer.
Yeah.
But we also sell content in many places around the world. Prehistoric Planet was a big commission with Apple TV. Or sometimes we sell the formats. So we'll take a program like Ghosts, which actually wasn't a studio's production originally, but we sell the format. So we do a US version of it, for example. And in fact, the US version of it is very successful. One of the top, I think it was their top comedy last year, one of their top programs. So we'll do that. Actually, interestingly, I think for me always is we sell formats of things also like Miranda, which I think of Miranda, such a UK and so based on her, but there are different versions of those. Ruby, I think she's called in Germany.
Oh, wow.
We sell a US and we do a US format. So so we have quite an international element to us. And not least, we also own and run the BBC websites around the world. So bbc.com is part of BBC Studios. So we are very much a global content maker and distributor.
And I suppose as sort of head of CRM data and insights, is a huge amount of data across all of that that you're just managing and plugging into the business and helping to drive it.
Yes. Yeah, so actually we've really on the data side been building a much more robust and fit for the future data capability to primarily support our direct to consumer businesses, so the websites around the world, UK TV Play as well, that are kind of main ones. But absolutely yes, that's the data part of my job, is making sure that we have as much data as we can in the right place, and that we're able to work with it and maximize what we've got out of it. And we do BBC.com. As advertising, and as we know, you know, digital advertising is all data driven. So that's a huge chunk of what the data side does. The insights part of my job, we focus really primarily on production, and on the brands and licensing. So the ancillaries of what we make from our content. So on the production side, we work throughout the content lifecycle from feeding in inspirational insights to the development part of the cycle. So if we know we are trying to, that a particular customer is aiming for a particular audience, we might help the production team, development team, to understand that audience better, to give them some inspiration through the whole cycle, through concept testing at various different stages, script to treatment, through to you know, final, and then the performance reporting and learnings that we get at the end of it. So really throughout the creative cycle, we work on that.
That sounds amazing. What a fantastic role.
Very interesting. We like it. Keeps us busy.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much for joining us. As we were discussing earlier, we're here to talk about some of the key themes that come out of the Media Trends and Predictions report, but also some trends that you're seeing as well, particularly affecting your business or those in your sector. And one of the big ones, of course, that everybody's thinking about at the moment is the ongoing cost of living crisis, what we've seen in terms of the challenges that really affect consumers and audiences all around the world. If you read the report, we do talk about the fact that that's quite a nuanced impact, and people are reacting in different ways, both in terms of the audiences and also organisations. What do you see from your point of view for the sector, and both for BBC Studios? How is the cost of living crisis playing out from that for you?
The macroeconomics context is tough. I think it was tough in 2023, and I expect it will continue to be tough in 2024. And that's hard. It feels like it's sort of a grinding time for everyone as individuals and as well as organizations. I think it is challenging. From a production side, I think that what I see affecting us from a content perspective is that quality will always reign. So when things are tight, when money is tighter, commissioners are really wanting to spend wisely. And so you will, I think as an audience member, you will see some fantastic content because they will be choosing very carefully to make sure they get the best content. And great content will always rise. Like our natural history content is really unrivaled. Planet Earth 3 was another phenomenal program. But a quality can also, I kind of think of it as, you can always have light quality. You know, Strictly is another BBC Studios piece of content which is continues just amazingly to be well loved, and I think also in the times of cost of living crisis, audiences need that sort of light kind of relief, and I think those programs really work through. And much as it pains me to admit it, because it's not a BBC Studios production, The Traitors, very, very, very successful.
Oh, yes, one of my favourites.
Yep. So that is an incredibly high quality program, but definitely sort of lifts people out of their world and puts them into a different place. So I think that is always will be a focus for content on high quality, and that will continue to come through. I also think actually the other end of it, some of the sort of, you know, cheap and cheerful content also, I think we'll see rise. Something that can, you know, lots of our YouTube content, YouTube-only content, things that can be produce for less money, sort of more cost efficient in that sense, but are still good and light, and they are what they are. And so I think we'll see some of that also rise. And it's kind of the stuff in the middle, I think, that gets to, you and I probably have seen enough cycles of our lives where we know the economy does go through these moments, and that's the kind of thing I think that you tend to see, and I expect that we will see that again in 2024.
Yeah, continued pressures. So one of the other big themes, of course, that always comes through is the changing viewer behavior and how audiences are embracing digital, connected TV, and what that means, particularly for broadcasters, but also I think for the production sector. What does that kind of change in viewing behavior around the world mean for you as you're thinking about your offer?
I think for us it's more opportunity. I have worked on the broadcast side, I have worked on the production side. From the production side, we just want our great content out there to as many people as we can in as many ways that we can, and it doesn't matter how it gets there, and we're quite agnostic about that. So I think for us as a production company, it's opportunity. It allows for different ways to come at it. So we certainly do many long form pieces of content which will go to broadcasters, as we've said, and let's also not lose sight of the fact that there is still a steady flow of very good content, things like Antiques Roadshow and Countryfile. Actually, EastEnders is having a very good strong moment. And there are big moments where you bring people together and they really still want to watch that. You know, the top programs of last year included the Coronation, Eurovision, big life moments. But what's nice as a content maker is that we can also really lean in to the various different formats. So my part of the business in particular works very heavily in YouTube and TikTok. And how do we make content that is just for those formats? So, for example, there's a piece of YouTube first content that we have called Albert Squared, which comes off of EastEnders. It's a game show with some of the characters from EastEnders, and that was made specifically for YouTube in that format. So I think for creatives, for a production company, it opens up opportunity.
Yeah, fantastic. That's really interesting to hear. And so talk to me a little bit about the kind of round the world opportunity for you. How global do you think content can be?
Well, I think it absolutely is global. And we've talked a little bit about this, the different formats. And what's an interesting way is we always sort of look at what things travel well as they are.
Yeah.
So wholesale, and what things travel well adapted.
Yeah.
So
okay.
Things like Ghosts, which is a brilliant piece of content in the UK, but sells as a format. We do different formats and it travels brilliantly as a format. And then there are other things that just go exactly as they are. Planet Earth 3 can go everywhere you want to go in exactly the format that it goes in, and it does. Or in the kids and family world, if you have children who are in the preschool window, you'll be aware of Bluey, which is an Australian kids program, but is wildly popular really everywhere. It's bigger in the US than it is in the UK, and it's pretty big in the UK. Studios has the privilege of distributing it and has rights to sell toys and do live events, and it is an amazing piece of content, and that really does travel just as it is, to where it can go. So you do see that. That being said, I would also put that alongside the acknowledgement that markets are very different as well. So there are different underlying structures to markets, which mean that they will move in different ways. Actually, I think that impacts less the content and more some of those elements like we talked about in terms of hybrid. So if you are in the US, it is very different. It is a market that has been heavily reliant on cable and digital for really as long as, I'm too old to say, but from when I was 10 in my little town and in the south of the US, we had cable. It was always there. It's a different market. And so but then that got more and more expensive, and it drove people away from that. And so you have the whole cord cutting, and fast channels have become huge in the US because it's ripe to have a free to air. I think the UK structurally is different from that.
Yeah.
We have of course, a very big public service broadcaster, but also a huge free-to-air market in Freeview. So we still have 40% of the UK population who access their television through Freeview or Freesat, not through any long-term contract. So structurally, I don't know that the content does have to vary, but it's actually more about the delivery of how you get there is very different market by market.
I suppose increasingly you have to think about that for some of your content. You're having to effectively distribute it yourselves as well as sell.
Well, because the other part of the BBC Studios world is distribution. And we do have a channels business, channels and streaming business, particularly in other markets around the world. And so we are thinking there are markets in which FAST is a major channel and we are moving into that. You can find Top Gear FAST channels, for example.
Yeah.
And there are markets in which that's absolutely right, obviously in the US, but also markets in Europe, and other markets where that's less so, where they're still very, very linear. And we have some very successful linear television channels.
So
you have to be nimble, and I think you have to understand the market.
Yeah. Okay. So yet again, the importance of that insight
and the local
data and that local and global.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Global flavor of things. Okay, so let's talk a little bit. I know you do your own thinking about trends. Some of the key trends that you've seen, anyone that you particularly want to pull out and give us a flavor of?
Well, it's related, I think, to the cost of living. Often, again, we have seen other economic cycles and downturns. And I think what we're seeing now is something similar to what we see in the past, which is alongside that, as money gets tight, you can often see a nostalgia, a sort of hankering for the past sort of element. I think it's a part of a need for comfort that comes in. And I think we are seeing that. And from a content perspective, that translates into reboots.
Yes.
So it has been a wave. We have seen a wave of reboots. We're in the midst of Gladiator going on BBC One on a Saturday night. And we have, you know, Big Brother had a reboot. There are many reboots. And I think they sort of, it's because they hit both of the trend of they are a safer bet to commission because it's a format that has worked in the past and it's less of a risk to take that again. But also they hit the consumer desire for comfort. And I think that they work. I mean, I think the jury is out on whether or not that's a long-term trend as opposed to a micro trend of the moment happen to be in this year. Sometimes they work, like The Weakest Link works for us, the studio's production, that has been a really good successful reboot. Sometimes they're not quite so successful.
And do you think that's because people haven't quite hit the spot in terms of what audiences are interested in now? Or
I think it's very hard to find a way of both making it feel comfortably familiar but also fresh and new. Because as much as we sort of, there is a trend towards the nostalgic, we also, there's always a counter trend to that, and the counter trend in each of us is that we do want to feel like we're moving and changing and going with the times, and the sort of constant quest for something new is there. So
trying to get the balance right.
I think it's very hard.
One of the topics that we talk about in the report actually is the writer's strike, and of course that's evolved quite a lot. Do you want to talk about what the writer's strike meant in terms of the content mix that you were focusing on and how that's now going to change?
I mean, because we have less of a US production hub, it did not affect our output as much. We do have some US production, but we're much more of a UK production hub. But watch with great interest what's happening there and in terms of commissioning. And there were some interesting things, like actually going back to Ghosts, the UK version of Ghosts went in as it was onto CBS and did very well because they couldn't have the US version of Ghosts. There were no new episodes. So it's interesting. I think also it's a part of I think we'll see a bit more unscripted come through, and particularly in the US, which is a big market for us. Again, that's sort of linked, I think, to the tight financial situation.
Yes.
When things are tight, scripted is amazing, but very costly.
Yeah.
Unscripted is more cost efficient in that sense. And so I think, again, I do feel like often when two trends come together is when you actually see action happening in that kind of cost efficient. And as it happens, the impact of the writer strike, I think, means we'll see a bit more unscripted for a while. So that's good. That, again, ruthlessly from a studio's perspective, we have a really strong unscripted offer. So that's great news for us in that sense. But I think for me personally, and maybe you'll share this as people who work in the data and insights industry, I watched these strikes with fascination because one of the biggest issues for them was transparency of data. So for both the writers and the actors, they were one of their top three or four points they were arguing for was greater transparency of SVOD performance. It is particularly in the US still very closed. Nielsen does report 8 SVOD providers, but it isn't in the currency in the same way that it is in the UK. This, I have to say, and I do think even the US will admit this, the UK is now actually ahead, and it is seen, it's because the SVOD is incorporated here. Well, Netflix and Disney and Amazon in particular are incorporated here. It makes a massive difference in what you can see, but that's not the case in the US. So, and it's important for the writers and the actors because they, in the linear world, traditionally have been paid extra residuals, they call them, based on the performance of a show. So they effectively get a performance bonus.
Yeah.
But that wasn't happening with the SVOD providers because they didn't know how their programs were doing.
Yeah.
And they, to varying degrees, will sort of eke out a little bit, but some of them are very, very closed. And so, and I'm desperate to see that data.
Yeah.
Desperate for greater transparency. So it was brilliant to see that come through in the writer's strike. I mean, unfortunately, we did not get full transparency. They in both cases, effectively, the SVOD providers had to agree that they would, under very strict conditions, pass data to a small select group of people on the side of the unions who would then help to administer the residuals based on that. But I do feel like it was a crack. It was the opening of that.
Yeah.
And you see it a bit. I mean, that combined with moving towards ad funded on those providers, I really sincerely hope we will see a movement towards greater transparency of data.
Yeah. And I think we'll see that more generally. There's trends. So the European Union are talking about various initiatives to try and get more transparency of data around what's happening on digital platforms, for example. So I think this move towards more openness is something that we see more broadly, and obviously we're very excited to be part of that at Kantar
Media. And I think, you know, should feel proud about it. It is, I know, because we do work in different markets, the level of insight and data we are able to get in the UK is much greater.
That's fantastic, that rich data set that you got your hands
on we appreciate it.
It's a pleasure. Can we move on and talk a little bit about the impact of tech? Everybody's talking about AI. What do you think?
I think it was the surprise hit topic of 2023. If we'd sat here this time last year, the buzzwords at the beginning felt like they were metaverse, and that was the sort of thing we were talking about within our teams. And suddenly, because of ChatGPT, Gen AI came out of nowhere, and it was absolutely the topic of the year. I do think it will have a lasting impact on our lives, on our business, but I suspect 2024 will begin to be the crunch year of actually doing something. So 2023 was a lot of talking about it. I think 2024 will be a lot of working it through. Will it work? Where does it affect us? From a content maker's perspective, there are things that we need to work through in terms of rights and ownership. There are also things in terms of the relationship we have with audiences and the trust. Like if we use Gen AI or our content is used in any of that way, we don't want that to break the bond of trust that we have with our audience. So how do you do that? I think there's a lot of crunching through it, but undeniably, it is a massively transformative step in the technology journey. And I think again, wearing my data hat, it's there are huge opportunities of what you can do. And I think for me, it passes the test of ultimately it will make our lives better, easier, cheaper, and therefore will stick.
Yeah.
But we have to really work through some of the, how do we get it working right? We definitely, for example, from an audience perspective, we have to make sure we're not repeating wholly terrible biases that exist in the world. And we need to make sure that we're tackling that, so there are those issues you have to work through, but I think we will work them through because ultimately the benefit is considerable.
Yeah, and the world's getting so complex, you almost need the support of something like AI to actually help us simplify and make life better for everybody, really. So coming back to kind of big trends, is there anything, if you look at the long term, do you want to talk a little bit about your long-term thinking?
Well, it's good because I think there are both sort of trends that happen at the moment that are a consequence of specific things happening. So, for example, the reboot, I think we'll see more of that increase of unscripted because the circumstances at the now make the conditions ripe for those two genres to rise or push through. But I think also what we're looking at is just long, if you look long term, how content moves in waves. So we, again, in the UK, we have the benefit of lots and lots of historic data, and we have some top line data going back to the 1950s. And you can just see how over time there are big waves of different popularity. So variety shows were huge at points. There were points at which it's comedy was, there were points at which it was entertainment. We've been in a massive wave of drama, premium drama in particular. There are always things that take a lot. I mean, sport is always there, news is always there. And there will always be some element of drama, particularly I think in the US, it's a mass drama market. But I just wonder whether it just feels like we're on the cusp of what the next wave is. What's the next big thing? And it that may be pushed a bit because cost is tight, times are tight, and so premium drama is amazing but expensive, and that may push us into that. But we'd love to do some crystal ball gazing and see what's the next big wave. But I think you can see over time these sort of big moves, and I just wonder whether or not we're on the cusp of
what the next big thing will be. Well, maybe we'll come back in a year's time and find out if we've made any progress towards that. Well, that's absolutely brilliant, Margot. I suppose if I start to sort of wrap up, is there any one message that you give us that you think is going to be the focus for 2024 for you?
Yeah, so I feel like 2024 will be a challenging year to get through.
Yeah.
And in those times, you just have to go back to the core of what's good about what you do. And so for us as a production company, it definitely will be, absolute quality of what we have and what we do. But alongside that, a nimbleness to be able to try to experiment in new areas or more cost-efficient ways of doing things. I think we have to do those to sort of get through this. And I think history would show that tough times are often fantastic breeding grounds for great innovation. And so that's my hope for this year.
I think that's a wonderful closing thought and inspiring for all of us. So thank you so much, Margot. And for those listening, a reminder finally to check out the Media Trends and Predictions report, which you can find in the link in the introduction to this podcast. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Future Proof from Kantar and Side Business School. For all episodes and more information, visit kantar.com or oxfordfutureofmarketing.com. If you enjoyed this, please leave a rating and a review and subscribe on your favourite podcast app so you never miss an episode.